Luke was looking at her with a sort of surprised respect. Something flickered in Maris's eyes. Uncertainty? Clary, Chase said softly. Enough. He sounded defeated. Clary turned on Maris. What about the sword? She demanded. Maris looked at her for a moment with genuine puzzlement.
The sword?
The soul sword, said Clary. The one you can use to tell if a shadow hunter is lying or not. You can use it on Jace.
That's a good idea.
There was a spark of animation in Jace's voice.
Clary, you mean well, but you don't know what the sword entails, Luke said. The only one who can use it is the Inquisitor.
Jace sat forward.
Then call on her. Call the Inquisitor. I want to end this.
No,
Luke said. But Maris was looking at Jace.
The Inquisitor, she said reluctantly, is already on her way.
Maris,
Luke's voice cracked.
Tell me you haven't called her into this.
I didn't.
Did you think the Clave wouldn't involve itself in this wild tale of forsaken warriors and portals and staged deaths?
After what Hodge did?
We're all under investigation now, thanks to Valentine,
she finished, seeing Jace's white and stunned expression.
The Inquisitor could put Jace in prison. She could strip his marks. I thought it would be better
if Jace were gone when she arrived, said Luke. No wonder you've been so eager to send him away.
Who is the Inquisitor? Clary demanded. The word conjured up images of the Spanish Inquisition, of torture, the whip and the rack. What does she do?
She investigates shadow hunters for the Clave, said Luke.
She ensures the law hasn't been broken by Nephilim.
She investigated all the Circle members after the uprising.
She cursed Hodge,
Jay said.
She sent you here?
She chose our exile and his punishment. She has no love for us and hates your father.
I'm not leaving, said Jace, still very pale.
What will she do to you if she gets here and I'm gone? She'll think you conspired to hide me. She'll punish you. You and Alec and Isabel and Max.
Maris said nothing.
Maris, don't be a fool, Luke said. She'll blame you more if you let Jace go. Keeping him here and allowing the trial by sword would be a sign of good faith.
Keeping Jace? You can't be serious, Luke, Clary said.
She knew using the sword had been her idea, but she was beginning to regret ever having brought it up.
She sounds awful.
But if Jace leaves, said Luke, he can never come back. He'll never be a shadow hunter again. Like it or not, the Inquisitor is the law's right hand. If Jace wants to stay a part of the Clave, he has to cooperate with her. He does have something on his side, something the members of the Circle did not have after the uprising.
And what's that? Maris asked. Luke smiled faintly.
Unlike you, he said, Jace is telling the truth.
Maris took a hard breath, then turned to Jace. Ultimately, it's your decision, she said.
If you want the trial, you can stay here until the Inquisitor comes.
I'll stay, Jace said. There was a firmness in his tone, devoid of anger, that surprised Clary. He seemed to be looking past Maris, a light flickering in his eyes, as if of reflected fire. In that moment, Clary couldn't help but think that he looked very like his father.
Chapter 4. The Cuckoo in the Nest.
Ernst juice, molasses, eggs. Weeks past their sell-by date, though. And something that looks kinda like lettuce.
Lettuce? Clary peered over Simon's shoulder into the fridge.
Oh, that's some mozzarella.
Simon shuddered and kicked Luke's fridge door shut.
Order pizza?
I already did,
said Luke, coming into the kitchen with the cordless phone in hand.
One large veggie pie, 3 Cokes. And I called the hospital,
he added, hanging the phone up.
There's been no change with Jocelyn.
Oh, Clary said. She sat down at the wooden table in Luke's kitchen. Usually Luke was pretty neat, but at the moment the table was covered in unopened mail and stacks of dirty plates. Luke's green duffel hung across the back of a chair. She knew she should be helping with the cleaning up, but lately she just hadn't had the energy. Luke's kitchen was small and a little dingy at the best of times. He wasn't much of a cook, as evidenced by the fact that the spice rack that hung over the old-fashioned gas stove was empty of spices. Instead, he used it to hold boxes of coffee and tea. Simon sat down next to her as Luke cleared the dirty dishes off the table and dumped them into the sink.
"Are you okay?" he asked in a low voice.
"I'm all right." Clary managed a smile. "I didn't expect my mom to wake up today, Simon. I have this feeling she's waiting for something."
"Do you know what?"
"No, just that something's missing."
She looked up at Luke, but he was involved in vigorously scrubbing the plates clean in the sink.
"Or someone."
Simon looked quizzically at her, then shrugged. "So it sounds like the scene at the Institute was pretty intense."
Clary shuddered. "Alec and Isabel's mom is scary."
"What's her name again?"
"Maris," said Clary, copying Luke's pronunciation.
"It's an old shadow hunter name."
Luke dried his hands on a dishcloth.
"And Jace decided to stay there and deal with this Inquisitor person? He didn't want to leave?" Simon said.
"It's what he has to do if he ever wants to have a life as a shadow hunter," said Luke. "And being that, one of the Nephilim, means everything to him. I knew other shadow hunters like him back in Idris. If you took that away from him..."
The familiar buzz of the doorbell sounded. Luke tossed the dishcloth onto the counter.
"I'll be right back."
As soon as he was out of the kitchen, Simon said,
"It's really weird thinking of Luke as someone who was once a shadow hunter. Weirder than it is thinking of him as a werewolf."
"Really? Why?"
Simon shrugged.
"I've heard of werewolves before. They're sort of a known element. So he turns into a wolf once a month, so what? But the shadow hunter thing? They're like a cult."
"They're not like a cult."
"Sure they are. Shadow hunting is their whole lives. And they look down on everyone else. They call us mundanes. Like they're not human beings. They're not friends with ordinary people. They don't go to the same places. They don't know the same jokes. They think they're above us."
Simon pulled one gangly leg up and twisted the frayed edge of the hole in the knee of his jeans.
"I met another werewolf today."
"Don't tell me you were hanging out with Freaky Pete at the Hunter's Moon." There was an uneasy feeling in the pit of her stomach, but she couldn't have said exactly what was causing it. Probably free-floating stress.
"No, it was a girl," Simon said. "About our age. Named Maya."
"Maya?"
Luke was back in the kitchen carrying a square white pizza box. He dropped it onto the table and Clary reached over to pop it open. The smell of hot dough, tomato sauce, and cheese reminded her how starved she was. She tore off a slice, not waiting for Luke to slide a plate across the table to her. He sat down with a grin, shaking his head.
"Maya's one of the pack, right?" Simon asked, taking a slice himself.
Luke nodded.
"Sure. She's a good kid. I've had her over here a few times looking out for the bookstore while I've been at the hospital. She lets me pay her in books."
Simon looked at Luke over his pizza.
"Are you low on money?"
Luke shrugged.
"Money's never been important to me, and the pack looks after its own."
Clary said, "My mom always said that when we ran low on money, she'd sell one of my dad's stocks. But since the guy I thought was my dad wasn't my dad, and I doubt Valentine has any stocks..."
"Your mother was selling her jewelry off bit by bit," said Luke. "Valentine had given her some of his family's pieces, jewelry that had been with the Morgensterns for generations. Even a small piece would fetch a high price at auction."
He sighed.
"Those are gone now, though Valentine may have recovered them from the wreckage of your old apartment."
"Well, I hope it gave her some satisfaction anyway," Simon said, "selling off his stuff like that."
He took a third piece of pizza. It was truly amazing, Clary thought, how much teenage boys were able to eat without ever gaining weight or making themselves sick. "It must have been weird for you," she said to Luke, "seeing Maris Lightwood like that, after such a long time."
"Not precisely weird. Maris isn't that different now from how she was then. In fact, she's more like herself than ever, if that makes sense."
Clary thought it did. The way that Maris Lightwood had looked recollected to her the slim, dark girl in the photo Hodge had given her, the one with the haughty tilt to her chin. "How do you think she feels about you?" she asked. "Do you really think they hoped you were dead?"
Luke smiled.
"Maybe not out of hatred, no. But it would have been more convenient and less messy for them if I had died, certainly." That I'm not just alive, but am leading the downtown pack can't be something they hoped for. It's their job, after all, to keep the peace between downworlders, and here I come, with a history with them and plenty of reason to want revenge. They'll be worried I'm a wild card.
Are you? Asked Simon. They were out of pizza, so he reached over without looking and took one of Clary's nibbled crusts. He knew she hated crust.
A wild card, I mean. There's nothing wild about me. I'm stolid. Middle-aged.
Except that once a month you turn into a wolf and go tearing around slaughtering things, Clary said.
It could be worse, Luke said. Men my age have been known to purchase expensive sports cars and sleep with supermodels.
You're only 38, Simon pointed out. That's not middle-aged.
Thank you, Simon. I appreciate that.
Luke opened the pizza box and, finding it empty, shut it with a sigh.
Though you did eat all the pizza.
I only had 5 slices, Simon protested, leaning his chair backward so it balanced precariously on its 2 back legs. How many slices did you think were in a pizza, dork? Clary wanted to know. Less than 5 slices isn't a meal. It's a snack. Simon looked apprehensively at Luke. Does this mean you're going to wolf out and eat me?
Certainly not.
Luke rose to toss the pizza box into the trash.
You would be stringy and hard to digest.
But kosher, Simon pointed out cheerfully.
I'll be sure to point any Jewish lycanthropes your way.
Luke leaned his back against the sink.
But to answer your earlier question, Clary, it was strange seeing Mayris Lightwood, but not because of her. It was the surroundings.
The Institute reminded me too much of the Hall of Accords in Idris. I could feel the strength of the Grey Book's runes all around me, after 15 years of trying to forget them. Did you, Clary asked, manage to forget them?
There are some things you never forget. The runes of the book are more than illustrations. They become part of you, part of your skin. Being a shadow hunter never leaves you. It's a gift that's carried in your blood, and you can no more change it than you can change your blood type.
I was wondering, Clary said, if maybe I should get some marks myself. Simon dropped the pizza crust he'd been gnawing on.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. Why would I joke about something like that? And why shouldn't I get marks? I'm a shadow hunter. I might as well go for what protection I can get.
Protection from what? Simon demanded, leaning forward so that the front legs of his chair hit the floor with a bang.
I thought all this shadow hunting stuff was over. I thought you were trying to live a normal life.
Luke's tone was mild. I'm not sure there's such a thing as a normal life.
Clary looked down at her arm, where Jace had drawn the only mark she'd ever received. She could still see the lace-like white tracery it had left behind, more a memory than a scar. Sure, I want to get away from the weirdness, but what if the weirdness comes after me? What if I don't have a choice?
Or maybe you don't want to get away from the weirdness that badly, Simon muttered. Not as long as Jace is still involved with it anyway.
Luke cleared his throat.
Most Nephilim go through levels of training before they receive their marks. I wouldn't recommend getting any until you've completed some instruction. And whether you even want to do that is up to you, of course. However, there is something you should have. Something every shadow hunter should have.
An obnoxious, arrogant attitude? Simon said.
A stele, said Luke. Every shadow hunter should have a stele.
Do you have one? Clary asked, surprised. Without responding, Luke headed out of the kitchen. He was back in a few moments, holding an object wrapped in black fabric. Setting the object down on the table, he unrolled the cloth, revealing a gleaming wand-like instrument made of a pale, opaque crystal. A stele.
Pretty, said Clary.
I'm glad you think so, said Luke, because I want you to have it.
Have it? She looked at him in astonishment. But it's yours, isn't it?
He shook his head. This was your mother's. She didn't want to keep it at the apartment in case you happened to cross it, so she asked me to hold on to it for her.
Clary picked the stele up. It felt cool to the touch, though she knew it would heat to a glow when used. It was a strange object, not quite long enough to be a weapon, not quite short enough to be an easily manipulated drawing tool. She supposed the odd size was just something you got used to over time. I can have it?
Sure. It's an old model, of course, almost 20 years out of date. They may have refined the design since. Still, it's reliable enough.
Simon watched her as she held the stele, like a conductor's baton, tracing invisible patterns lightly on the air between them.
This kind of reminds me of the time my grandfather gave me his old golf clubs.
Clary laughed and lowered her hand.
Yeah, except you never used those.
And I hope you never have to use that, Simon said, and looked quickly away before she could reply.
Smoke rose from the marks in black spirals, and he smelled the choking scent of his own skin burning. His father stood over him with the stele, its tip gleaming red like the tip of a poker left too long in the fire.
"Close your eyes, Jonathan," he said. "Pain is only what you allow it to be."
But Jace's hand curled in on itself, unwillingly, as if his skin were writhing, twisting to get away from the stele. He heard the snap as one bone in his hand broke, and then another. Jace opened his eyes and blinked up at the darkness, his father's voice fading away like smoke in rising wind. He tasted pain, metallic on his tongue. He'd bitten the inside of his lip. He sat up wincing. The snap came again, and involuntarily he glanced down at his hand. It was unmarked. He realized the sound was coming from outside the room. Someone knocking, albeit hesitantly, at the door. He rolled off the bed, shivering as his bare feet hit the cold floor. He'd fallen asleep in his clothes, and he looked down at his wrinkled shirt in distaste. He probably still smelled like wolf, and he ached all over. The knock came again. Jace strode across the room and threw the door open. He blinked in surprise.
Alec?
Alec, hands in his jeans pockets, shrugged self-consciously.
Sorry it's so early. Mom sent me to get you. She wants to see you in the library.
What time is it?
5 a.m.
What the hell are you doing up?
I never went to bed.
It looked like he was telling the truth. His blue eyes were surrounded by dark shadows. Jace ran a hand through his tousled hair.
All right, hang on a second while I change my shirt.
Heading to the wardrobe, he rummaged through neatly folded square stacks until he found a dark blue long-sleeve t-shirt. He peeled the shirt he was wearing off carefully. In some places, it was stuck to his skin with dried blood.
Alec looked away.
What happened to you?
His voice was oddly constricted.
Picked a fight with a pack of werewolves.
Jay slid the blue shirt over his head. Dressed, he padded after Alec into the hallway.
You have something on your neck, he observed.
Alec's hand flew to his throat.
What? Looks like a bite mark, said Jace. What were you doing out all night anyway?
Nothing.
Beet red, his hand still clamped to his neck, Alec started down the corridor. Jace followed him.
I went walking in the park, tried to clear my head.
And ran into a vampire?
What? No, I fell.
On your neck?
Alec made a noise, and Jace decided the issue was clearly better dropped.
Fine, whatever. What did you need to clear your head about?
You? My parents? Alec said.
They came and explained why they were so angry after you left, and they explained about Hodge. Thanks for not telling me that, by the way.
Sorry. It was Jace's turn to flush. I couldn't bring myself to do it somehow.
Well, it doesn't look good.
Alec finally dropped his hand from his neck and turned to look accusingly at Jace.
It looks like you were hiding things. Things about Valentine.
Jace stopped in his tracks.
Do you think I was lying? About not knowing Valentine was my father?
No.
Alec looked startled, either at the question or at Jace's vehemence in asking it. And I don't care who your father is. It doesn't matter to me. You're still the same person.
Whoever that is.
The words came out cold before he could stop them.
I'm just saying.
Alec's tone was placating.
You can be a little harsh sometimes. Just think before you talk, that's all I'm asking. No one's your enemy here, Jace.
Well, thanks for the advice, Jace said. I can walk myself the rest of the way to the library.
Jace.
But Jace was already gone, leaving Alex's distress behind. Jace hated it when other people were worried on his behalf. It made him feel